And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to the third episode of Jurassic Pod. I'm coming to you from my kitchen table in East Toronto. We don't need to get more specific than that. On the line with me, it's such an old-fashioned term, on the line. Holly McKenzie, how are you?
I'm doing well. On the line, old-fashioned probably would have been better than the tech issues I just had trying to bring this podcast to life.
Yeah, we're really working for you people. You should appreciate all this audio gold.
I'm here now, and hopefully...
Yeah, hopefully for like 40 more minutes, everything can stay on board, and then all technical issues can pop up after that.
Love to be reminded of just how little I understand about the things that I work with every day, you know? Like, sometimes people will ask me a question about, like, internet things, and it's like, unless it's the exact things that I use every day, I have no idea.
Yeah. I feel, like, similarly whenever my parents are asking me about something, like, why their computer mm-hmm. isn't working, and, like, they think I'm a god because I'm 32 or whatever years younger than them. So obviously I seem like a genius to them when it comes to computers. And I have to like really emphasize how little I know,
I know all the time.
My nephew like built a computer.
He's
13. And like apparently there are like Google videos that make it very easy. But like... it's like really beautiful, and it like you can see the inside of like the computer.
Oh, the different colors and stuff.
Yeah,
that's insane. Yeah,
and like I think he got a bit of help, but like it didn't seem as if it were a big accomplishment to him at all. And I'm like,
I mean, even if you're getting help, it's like crazy that humans can do
that. And I'm like, I don't know how to fix anything. And
when you said
and you built a computer.
When you said Google videos, did you mean Google or
no,
YouTube?
No, I meant YouTube. You know by now, I don't know. The words I say only have tangential relation to the words I mean.
There are Google videos? That was great.
Oh, God. Okay. So I'm feeling a bit out of it. And I noticed this coming on yesterday being great. Sunday. And... you know, naturally, I thought I was sick or something. Mm-hmm. But I think I might just be tired because the Raptors...
come on.
The Raptors haven't...
I'm segueing.
Come on. The Raptors haven't had multiple days off in a row in between games until today, Monday, and tomorrow, Tuesday. It's been either back-to-backs or one day off in between games. And all of a sudden... they have 2 days off now. They have 2 days off next week in between Portland and Utah games. They have 2 days off between the Golden State and mm-hmm. Memphis games. And I want to say, I'm not positive, that they have two days off in between Memphis and Indiana. So the schedule from a load perspective, from a frequency perspective, about to lighten up... that is about the only positive thing I can say about the schedule.
I mean, they're going on the road, which has been great.
Yeah, no, Road Warriors. It kicked in a year late, but now the Raptors, maybe because of last year, they're now invincible on the road, 4-0. Since we last spoke to you good people last, the Raptors went 1-2, winning on the road in Washington, D.C., I took a train from New York to Washington, which included a stop in Wilmington, Delaware, Joe Biden's hometown, or not hometown, but I think like where he has governed or where he served in the Senate, certainly. And we know about Joe Biden's love of trains. So it felt specific, particularly notable to be on a train going through Wilmington, Delaware. Anyway, the Raptors won.
I wanted to say that was a great segue that I messed up because I didn't know it was going to be a segue into the Raptors. And I was going to make fun of you for saying you were tired because I thought you were going to be one of those adult humans who say they're tired when the clock switch.
No.
Even though you get
it. No, I love fallback. I do complain about spring forward. So get ready for that podcast.
I have zero.
No, I know you don't. And I will complain about it.
You get extra sunshine.
No, I realize it's a net benefit. I'm just saying in the moment it screws my crap up. But I'm not going to complain about fallback. I've been really exhausted the last few days, yesterday and today.
No kidding.
And maybe it has to do with the Raptors schedule, is all I'm saying.
Well, I'm glad you're not sick.
Let's hope so. I'm knocking on wood now. Yeah. So Raptors won in Washington, lost a game they led for 47 minutes and 55 seconds against Cleveland. And then in Pascal Siakam's return, they lose to Brooklyn after a pretty damn good first half. They had an unfortunate start to the third quarter, and that pretty much doomed them. So the Raptors come in to this week. They are at 6-5 with the 13th offensive rating in the league, 107.9, tied with the Atlanta Hawks. The 11th best defensive rating, 105.2, and they have a net rating of 2.7, which is the 9th best.
And so many rebounds.
They rebound the ball a lot. They have the 3rd best rebound percentage as a whole, and they have the best offensive rebound percentage, which is doing a lot of the legwork of keeping their offense functional. We'll talk about all of that. Or some of that. I shouldn't guarantee anything. Holly did make a rundown, which I will now largely ignore, probably. But I won't ignore it in this way, because I think the highlight is Pascal Siakam returns ahead of at least what we were led to believe was the schedule, about 5 months less a few days from his surgery to repair his torn labrum. We thought it would be closer to American Thanksgiving, so maybe 2 or 3 more weeks. Even when that seemed to speed up a bit, it still seemed like the start of the road trip coming next week might have been a target date. Instead, he gets 25 minutes and starts against Brooklyn. So before we talk about how he looked, I think the thing that stood out to me, and I'm guessing stood out to you, was how he sounded, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I also the crowd reaction was really, from TV, it was it seemed really great, and
it was good. It was good inside the arena for sure.
And I also noticed you mentioned in your piece from the game that you were surprised that he was not the last starter introduced. And I have to say, I was curious. I was wondering how that was gonna unfold.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a stupid thing to care about, but I just thought because of the historical, and I only think about this in terms of the Jordan Bulls. Like I think that's because that's the most iconic introduction there is in the league.
Come on, the most iconic introduction is Kyle Lowry.
No,
on the floor doing his.
That's to Toronto fans, but like.
Kyle Lowry over Michael Jordan.
Look, I got a bunch of subscribers on that story, about his elaborate introduction. So I'm not going to complain, but the Alan Parsons Project, Sirius, playing over the Chicago Bulls intros. I mean, I grew up on that, so maybe it's my childhood just speaking, but I don't think there's anything close. But because of that, the last spot has become, and Jordan routinely just like beating out the PA announcer, like trying to be in the middle of the huddle while he was still being introduced, And I think like DeMar continued to like he did that when he was the last introduced as a raptor. But with me, like that's always held meaning because of that. And I was curious because of the interview Siakam did with the New York Times about not knowing whether he was the man or not. Mm-hmm. And we've discussed that. Mm-hmm. We don't have to continue with it. Whether they might just put him in that spot. Nope, it was Van Vliet. Siakam was third. He got a loud ovation when he was welcomed back. And I think...
Who was after?
I think it was OG started. I want to say Trent was fourth. I think it went OJ, okay. Barnes, Siakam, Trent, Van Vliet. So they're sort of going like forwards, center, backcourt. If you're going to make it rational, which like, why should we? It's a human construction. It doesn't have to be any sort of way. But yeah,
I kind of like keeping Fred last. And I also think it just, in a way, I mean, you can look at it the way that you said, which was you thought that Pascal would potentially be, you know, the final name. But I think in a way you're coming back from a long layoff. You had a challenging year last year, and off season. And I think it, you know, I mean, again, we're putting meaning into this.
Yeah, no, I don't think they care at all. And I should emphasize that I have no dog in this fight. I do not care. But it's interesting from an intellectual
level. All the attention is already on Pascal returning, rightfully so. But he's just sliding into the mix as it was, rather than shifting everything.
Yeah, and if we're going to shift meaning onto it, like Fred sort of is the vocal leader of this team. Like Pascal Siakam has talked about trying to get there, but it's clear that Van Vliet has some intrinsic leadership qualities that, you know, forget the Raptors, few other people in this league have.
He has had those qualities since day one. He was first signed by the Raptors as an undrafted player, hoping that he would be on the final roster.
Yeah, that's just like how he rolls.
That's the coolest thing about Fred is that he is the exact same guy, and also like just the most normal, relatable. Fred's the best. Like, Fred is the best.
Yeah.
But that being said, before we get into Pascal's play, I think you sort of alluded to it when you said how he sounded. Pascal's entire demeanor and body language this year has been so refreshing, and he just seems lighter. And I'm sure there is a relief that comes from returning to Toronto and also getting the surgery done, the surgery going well, watching the team do well, like as he's coming back. But to see him out there last night, you could just feel I felt like you could feel the joy that he had just to be playing basketball again. And that was really wonderful.
Yeah. And it sounds like, to whatever extent it can be, and you know, I think about not just within the context of basketball, but within everyday life, emotions and how much control we have over them, and how much we get to determine how we feel, and how much circumstances just overwhelm us, and how much is just a product of our DNA or our past experiences. But to the extent that Siakam can control them, I think he's made a conscious effort to be more positive. Because something he mentioned yesterday, and he mentioned previously when he was talking to a few reporters, including myself, before the season started, is like something I, you know, I'm paraphrasing, something I realized last season is it didn't matter if I was sad, we were losing. So you might as well be happy and make coming to work an enjoyable experience. And work from there, because the sadness and you know, it's natural to be frustrated. I feel like there's a song in which somebody says frustrated like that. You know, they're competitive, and when things don't go well, they're going to be frustrated. Great. Now I'm in my own head. But getting past that pretty quickly and turning the frustration into something positive seems like, something he's very much trying to do. And, you know, it was certainly clarifying and stark when he talked about finding out he needed surgery from Alex McKechnie, mm-hmm. saying that, like, this was his first surgery and he cried like he hadn't cried since his father mm-hmm. died, which is just like, whoa. You know, mm-hmm. we become so numb to surgeries and injuries. Like, just mm-hmm. got a notification that Colin Sexton, who we saw on Friday with the Cavs, mm-hmm. has mm-hmm. a meniscus injury. I don't know I haven't seen what type of repair or rehab there will be. But these things happen almost on a daily, if not daily, then, you know, twice, three times weekly basis with, like, really good players mm-hmm. in this league. And as fans, as reporters, we have to treat them as if they're things that happen all the time, because they are. And if you really got stuck on the human side of every single one of these, it would be...
I knew that
you sort of do, but, like, functionally, we... Yeah, like, you would just fail to continue to be productive. I would think that would be a problem. You can deny, confirm, or just not comment. But... It is important to zero back on the emotional part of it, is what I'm
getting at. Yeah, no, for sure. Especially, like, the thing with athletes, and I would say it's probably the case for most, but not all, but especially a large chunk, I would say. Their sport, whatever it is, be it basketball or you know, any other sport, in many ways becomes, like, their safe place. It's where they go to get away from things when they're bad, or if they're feeling alone or in a dark time. That sport is the thing that is always familiar. It's a constant. It's always there. We've heard DeMar DeRozan talk about this a lot. The basketball court is like a place where he can go to escape.
I think the phrase that's often used is sanctuary.
And especially for a player like Pascal, who has never had a surgery before, he's never had to seriously confront that realization and the reality that to be a professional athlete is typically a pretty short window. If you're lucky, you get to call it quits on your terms, but it usually happens sooner than you would like to play at this level. You only get a certain number of years, a certain opportunity. And when you're young, sometimes you know that, but you don't really think about it. It's hard to, like, realize that you are going to get older. You could get injured. And then when you do get injured and you can't have that outlet and that safe place, that sanctuary that you mentioned, I think it really makes you value the game even more in a way. And it makes you just realize how much you love it. So yeah, like, losing sucks and you may be upset or mad, or I was going to swear and I don't know if we're allowed to swear.
We are.
I was going to say, or pissed off if you lose.
I don't think that's swearing. I don't think we're going to need the explicit tag on...
I didn't know. I got very nervous.
Gee whiz!
You can feel all of those things after a loss, of course. But, you know, you have such a short window. You may as well enjoy it as much as you can. And I think that an injury and an extended layoff can really bring that perspective. And it sounds like this was a really tough thing for Pascal to hear, like, that there was going to be a 5 to 6 month layoff. And also just getting surgery can be really scary. But I think that he's coming back with a new perspective and one that he wouldn't have been able to really gain without having this experience. And he seems lighter, and I'm really, really happy for him, both that he's returning to the floor, but also that he seems a little lighter than he was last season.
And I think of part of the, you know, the disappointment of the surgery for him was that he was really eager to get to work on his game. Like, mm-hmm. as much as, mm-hmm. you know, Fred VanVleet had the line about the haters on Twitter, which, like, it's funny, and Fred likes to do that sort of thing at times. The fact is, like, Siakam was getting the criticism because mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. you know, large parts of, you know, certainly in the bubble, and then for large parts of last year, he wasn't playing up for, forget our standards, like, he wasn't playing up to his standard for himself. And I think bad three-point shooting numbers mm-hmm. exaggerated his overall impact a lot. Like, I think at times he was like a better version of himself last year than he was even the previous season, except he has shooting like really, and I mean, 3-point shooting is really important, so I don't mean to wave that away, but it is something that can go up and down by the year unless like you're an elite, elite shooter. Anyway, all of this is to say he wanted to go to work on his game, and he wasn't quite able to do that in the way he imagined. He has been practicing. He has been practicing with contact. And Sunday was the first time we got to see him play, and he finished with 15 points, 4 rebounds in 25 minutes. Nick Nurse said he was sort of going for a 4-6 minute run type thing. It didn't quite end up like that. He'll be on a bit of a minutes restriction, at least in the short term. We don't know how long that will last. The one notable thing is, and part of this isn't Siakam at all, like the Raptors just had a horrible shooting night, and I'm not convinced that was all a lack of spacing, but the offense did struggle when he was on the floor, but the offense struggled to varying degrees all night, and
the team as a whole was 7-30.
Yeah, that's not going to do it. That's not going to do it. Even like a team that we don't expect to be near the league leaders in 3-point percentage as a team, you don't expect OG Anunoby and Gary Trent, two of your better shooters, to go 1-for-11 from three. Like, the Raptors just aren't going to win many games when their best shooters shoot like that. And I'd have to go through every single attempt to say how much of that was spacing and how much of that was just good shooters missing good shots. I know the stint at the third quarter was good shooters missing good shots.
and great shooters making great shots.
Yeah, on the other side. But you sort of have to factor that into any time you play a team of that quality. This is my long meandering way of saying, what did you think of how Pascal looked on his return?
Yeah, I thought he looked good. You know, I mean, I think that there's definitely on-court chemistry that wasn't there, which I think is pretty normal for two reasons. One, for the player just coming back and sort of, you know, getting back into the groove, especially when you're playing like regimented stints of a certain amount of time. So you don't really get to have the freedom of like finding your groove and staying in the game or whatever. But also just he's playing with a relatively different lineup. You know, there are some of his same teammates out there, but everything's different than it was a year ago, the last time that he wasn't a year ago, but like the last time that he was on the court with these players. I thought he looked good. I think that the chemistry was the biggest thing to me. It just seemed a little off, but I think that that's normal.
Yeah. There was one possession I highlighted in my story that I thought was like, it's what you would want to see going forward. And I think it was in that horrible third quarter, actually. But Siakam drove to the middle, kicked it out to Gary Trent in the corner, and somebody came out to Trent. He, I think, passed to either Achiuwa or Van Vliet, who dumped it back off to Siakam, who was hanging out sort of close to the dunker spot. And Siakam was able to finish it with a dunk. And that's the type of ball movement that this team needs. Like, it's jarring. Again, I said this on Twitter, like, assist percentage isn't positive or negative, but I think, and the Raptors rank last in assist percentage, so, I mean, basically that is the percentage of their baskets that they assist on versus unassisted baskets. They're at just over 50% right now, which is last in the league. So that's not positive or negative, but when you look at the Raptors roster, you don't look at a lot of guys that are like, well, give the ball to him and let him attack a mismatch, or give the ball to him and let him work in isolation. I don't think that's the way that you're going to get the most
the team's going to function
out
of
this team. And I think they're succeeding has been in spite of that at times. And I think they did get a nice little flow going there that didn't necessarily come with that same assist percentage on the road on that 3-game trip. But I think that play from Siakam is what you will want to inject into the offense a bit more, and what was naturally limited by leaning on Fred VanVleet, who is a gifted playmaker, who is limited by his size and ability to see over defenses when he gets into the middle of it, and OG Anunoby, who can see over defenses, but is still certainly a mechanical, a more mechanical type passer. And he's had some pretty good assist games, like 5-6. He's been up in that range, mm-hmm. but that's certainly mm-hmm. a developing part of his game. And you, and the Raptors, this is my long way again, and we should just call this this episode,
it's Monday,
the longest possible way to say things. They need Siakam. And they need offensive development across the board. And like, I think the players who you can most the key players you can most hope for offensive development for throughout the season are Ananobi and Barnes. But they need mm-hmm. Siakam's, not baseline, I would say, but a level of playmaking he's already established. They need that more than anything else from him to appear, mm-hmm. because my God, Holly, when the defense looked good on Sunday, it looked really good.
That second quarter, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and you saw like the difference when it wasn't Barnes and Siakam there, when it was Trent and Svi Mikhailuk?
Yes.
Svi. And they were just,
he had a rough game
and he had been playing pretty well. Yeah. So like, and he's not, I think he was playing above his head in, compared to his,
but you know, I think the biggest thing yesterday was that the team didn't have Cam.
I think that was a big thing, but like they were playing mismatch basketball in the third quarter there. Like the Nets I'm talking about, they were attacking weaker defenders, and when it's Kevin Durant, who, you know, doesn't need much room to get a shot off in at the best of times, like when you can just switch on to Svi and or switch on to Gary Trent Jr. and all of a sudden you've got, you know, maybe not as much strength and you're working with a few extra inches of airspace to get a shot mm-hmm. over, it becomes hugely problematic. So the offensive side becomes huge so that the Raptors can play their best defenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seeing the size on the floor with Pascal out there was really cool. I mean, we've talked about this since the preseason training camp, but to actually see it in motion in that second quarter was like, holy. And we had already seen this team have really good defensive stretches, but it was cool to see it, especially against Brooklyn, because you're doing it against Durant, who's like the longest, craftiest, greatest like shooter in terms of just getting a shot off
in NBA history.
Ever.
Yeah, it's like him and Dirk, but he has more handling skills than Dirk, and able mm-hmm. to get for him to be able to get a shot off.
And he somehow just seems taller than everybody ever. Like he just
seems it's the height, but it's also the wingspan, right? Like his arms are just
so
long.
So impossibly long. It's just, we've been watching him for how many years and it still just amazes me.
I think I forgot who I was talking about it with, but it was after the first half and I had tweeted like, Raptors lead by 7. Durant really seems like he's looming and is taking a back seat so far in this game. And somebody responded to me like, every possession he doesn't shoot feels like a win. And I was like, it's been a whole career of this. It's just like, if there's a guy who could like average 40 for a season and do it like fairly efficiently, it's him. It's like absolutely mm-hmm. him. And like, he wouldn't even need the highest usage rate in the league to do that, I'm convinced.
All I could think last night, Sunday night. Yeah, I think I'm not supposed to say last night.
No, it's fine.
It's
Sunday,
confusing.
Yes.
But Sunday, similarly to what you were just saying, was, oh my God, this guy used to play with Steph Curry. like, how is that possible?
With Klay Thompson providing weak side space.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But like, you know, just talking about a guy who could average 40 and it'd be easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we move on to the next topic, you mentioned Ken...
Scotty Barnes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Before him ripping the ball from...
Before we get there... Sorry. Let's talk about, you mentioned Ken Burch, and I want to bring this up to ask you this. Let's assume full health. What do you think is the most sensible starting lineup for this team? I mean, we'll assume Fred, OG, and Pascal are givens. So how are you filling those two final spots?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I like Ken starting. I do. What are your thoughts?
I think it's Trent and Kem and Barnes coming off the bench just because.
Do you see? That's the part where I get stuck on.
Well, it's because he's been so good, and he's like, before Sunday, he was 13th in the league in minutes. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't a
insane.
Which is Fred was first and OG was fifth and Barnes was 13th and Pascal came back and Fred played another 40 minutes and 50 seconds. Let's get him some rest when possible. I think it's just the easiest solution for the short term and Barnes came off the bench at Florida State. And
but I still hate
I don't like it either.
But I still don't like it.
Yeah, you know? I think with what Trent has shown defensively on the perimeter, and because of Barnes' experience coming off the bench, it just is probably the easiest solution. And that doesn't mean that's how you're finishing. But I think for now, before
I feel like I've talked myself out of it just in this moment. I don't know.
I would say, as you know, for now, with Siakam, Anunoby, and Barnes, with those three on at the same time, with them still figuring out what the spacing looks like, I'd rather start on maybe a slightly solid, more solid offensive foundation and go from there. Saying that, like that doesn't necessarily seem like the way Nick Nurse is bending this year or the last
The coolest years. Thing to me about Nick and his belief in Scotty is after the game, Nick is saying Scotty needs to be more aggressive offensively. Yeah. He was great on defense, but he needs to be looking to score more. He needs to be taking more shots. Like he had said that multiple times this season, which is crazy because he's a rookie who's 13th in minutes and has taken a lot of shots and tried a lot of stuff. But that shows the belief that Nurse and the coaching staff have in Scotty, but also the size of the role they want him to play. And yeah, I mean, I have I'm backtracking now, but I do have a hard time wanting to make him take not starting is taking a step back. I'm not trying to say that. But, I'm in a circle.
It's hard. Well, I mean, the question I won't make you answer for the moment is if you're backtracking and don't think he should be coming off the bench,
who is coming off the bench,
Keb or Gary? But you don't have to answer that. We can make our guesses about that. But I will say that I love them talking about him being more aggressive because even if the offense isn't quite there yet. And I think we can all see where the holes are, not just with the shot, but with the handling in tight spaces. This is how you, and I think we've talked about this already, this is how you fully weaponize his skills on offense. And those would be his passing skills and his IQ, is by making his first instinct get to the rim. Because once teams know he is going to put that pressure on the rim, that's when the help comes, and that's when he can make the truly special plays that not many people of his size can make.
How cool was it to hear Blake Griffin and Kevin Durant talk about Barnes.
Yeah, really.
Week.
I didn't hear what Blake said. I heard the whole KD quote.
Yeah, they both just were raving, and Durant was awesome. I loved when he was like, "How old is he? 19, 20? Sheesh." The KD, and also KD also was talking about Nick Nurse, just saying that he's the type of coach that keeps you up at night thinking about what he's gonna throw at you. And I thought that was really, I mean, that's a compliment. Like, coaches very rarely get huge compliments during the season, but that's like, to me, that's like winning a Grammy or an Oscar. Like, holy, the best scorers.
On my Jays chat with my friends, which has turned into a Raptors chat given the time of year that I participate in less, because I can only talk about the Raptors so much.
Group chats?
Yeah.
Is it a group chat? I hate group chats. I am extremely anti-group chat.
Well, that's fine. It really made the Jays season more fun. Anyway, one of my friends, Steve, who you know, shout out Steve, was saying that Durant, like the Durant press conference was his favorite thing. And I was like joking with him, was like, love that validation, huh? But as a Raptors fan, you do love that validation, not only because Durant is so great, but also like he's honest. And I, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say almost to a fault, like he's honest to a fault, to the point where it's definitely got him under scrutiny before. Like, he's not going to say something just to make other people feel good, clearly.
I'm going to ask you something. I know that your memory isn't great sometimes, but do you remember a game a really long time ago when KD was still with the Thunder? And he was injured. I can't remember why, but he wasn't playing in Toronto. And he got pizza before the game. And he was offering pizza to the media that was in the locker room before the game talking to him.
I wonder if I missed that game, because I did miss a bunch of Kevin Durant games at the beginning of my career. And one of them was when I was covering the NCAA tournament in Buffalo. So it might have been that year.
It may have been that. It was one of the memories that will always stick out to me. One, because you don't normally have NBA players offering you their pregame food. Two, he had an entire pizza in the locker room before the game because he wasn't playing. And three, he wasn't playing, but he was just sitting in his locker just chatting with us, which was so, you know, you don't normally see that from one of the best players in the league. You would never see it today, I don't think. I don't think you would see that from Kevin Durant
My favorite moment like that was when Mike Ganter, the Toronto Sun, accidentally took I think it was a root beer from the fridge in the media room, and it turned out to be Shaq's root beer, and Shaq was like, "Where's my root beer?" And
I thought it was
orange. It might have been orange. It doesn't. Yeah.
Cream soda. Anyway. No, that was
to this day. Shaq doesn't know unless he's a Jurassic Pod listener. Shouts out to Shaq.
And Ganter being like, "Yeah, there was one cream soda."
Seemed good. let's go. We'll talk about Scottie Barnes' week quickly. He returned after a 2-game absence from a sprained thumb, and the Raptors lost twice. But yeah, he had some definite good moments. I did a sort of TikTok of his first game against. Evan,
you have TikTok?
I can't use that phrase now because it's an app. Ugh. I did a running diary, is what I meant, of the...
You were going to call a running diary a TikTok?
Yeah, like a TikTok is a type of story in news, journal.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Journalism.
Okay. And I thought you were just using it as like...
Yeah, and I wasn't using it correctly, even in the journalism term, because it's usually a TikTok in journalism is like, it explains how something happened. So like, it would be like a TikTok of how the Kyle Lowry to Miami deal came together. And you would explain like all the different moments that were important. So I wasn't even using it. Anyway, right. I did a running diary of Mobley, Barnes 1, and boy did they both, it wasn't Barnes' best game, but they still both delivered on their, you know, what makes them special, I thought.
The Barnes, again, second game, we were talking about him ripping the ball from KD, but doing the same thing to Jared Allen, like, that was like a
picture-perfect
like,
hip toss.
Body flip.
Wow. Picture perfect. Just great execution.
He's strong. Scottie Barnes is like superhuman strength.
Yeah. I think it's way too early for Rookie of the Year watch. I think given
No, it's not. Okay. It is not. Well, we're fully there. All right.
Well, Evan, maybe Evan Mobley has creeped ahead of him with a 26-point game at MSG. It's too bad Scotty Barnes missed his MSG chance for an appearance.
I know.
Those can hold some weight with media members, as you know. But I think it's, you know, given what he's showed defensively, it's still totally justified to be
Durant was talking about Barnes. He wasn't talking about other rookies.
Oh, you're going to throw some slander on Evan Mobley here? I think being very excited is a totally reasonable approach about Scotty Barnes.
And if it's not unreasonable, then that's fine. I will not be reasonable.
You mean if it is unreasonable, that's fine. You will not be. You said if it's not unreasonable, which would make it reasonable. You did an unintentional double negative is what I'm trying to tell you. Raptors can't win at home. Anything there? Any big theories?
Anything there? I think no. They were close games. I have a hard time really thinking too hard about Sunday's game, just because the third quarter was everything flipped. KD, Harden also had a great game. They kind of just were like, all right, like let's just push this. And the Raptors had a terrible shooting night. Like you said, they're not going to win games when they're shooting 7-30 from three.
Yeah, and I think
I know that sounds like you're simplifying
well,
it. Well,
yeah,
really.
I think there are some notes, certainly from the Cleveland game on the half-court offense down the stretch. And there are things we've seen all season long that when they've been forced into the half-court, A, they're slow, which is contributing to them having the second slowest pace in the league, which is...
But I do think having Pascal back is going to... Well, it'll be interesting to see how that...
Yeah,
how that
it helps. Should be able... It should, A, he is the best option in transition to have the ball, I mean. Which is weird because, like, early in his career, he was, like, the best option to finish in transition. But I think the importance of getting him the ball in transition is, A, it allows your best shooter, Fred VanVleet, to like go to the corner and get those looks in transition. And I just don't think, you know, OG Anunoby's certainly not there as a ball handler in transition. Scotty Barnes isn't there yet. I think he'll get there, but he's not there yet as a ball handler in transition. So I think, you know, Siakam in the middle of the floor with a kickout option to Fred or Trent and with like, you know, OG or Scotty running like sidecar with them for like a alley-oop or a dump off, like that's the best alignment of a potential Raptors fast break. Now turnovers happen where turnovers happen, and you can't always make it so, but I think like just having some possessions be like that will help them run and run more effectively, and also being less dependent on Fred means they should be able to get into their half-court actions more quickly and not necessarily have to spend an extra 2 or 3 seconds every possession getting it to Fred.
And that'll also just help Fred, hopefully, take off some of the load that he has been having to carry to start this season.
Yeah, and that's both from a minutes and just, like, a offensive load perspective. Like,
not having to do everything.
Yeah, and...
Let's
remember, like, he plays a pretty damn important role defensively. He's not coasting defensively, even though he's, like, a bit more into the old Kyle Lowry role of, like, help off your guy and be a, you know, off-ball genius. Like, he still has a, you know, more often than not, it has a pretty, you know, good point of attack player to guard. It was a lot of Darius Garland on Friday, who had a really nice second half in that game. But look, this isn't a surprise. The Raptors have, you know, their half-court offense always figured to be their, you know, weakest stage of the game from a pure talent perspective, and that was with Siakam. So as they work to get Pascal more involved, it's not a surprise that this is where they're lagging, right?
No, not a surprise at all. Still, it's painful to lead in a game for the entire game minus the final 4.7, I think it was, 4.3, whatever it was, seconds. That's
and, like those two shots, the OG Anunoby, you know, baseline jumper, again, over Jared Allen. Mm-hmm. Jared Allen is awesome, by the way. Like, he's such a good rim protector, and, like, so many guys like that are played off the court now, and mm-hmm. the way he isn't and is able to stick around, like, I'm not sure that long-term they're going to need both him and Mobley, but, like, you want both, like, certainly at this phase of Mobley's career, like, having that extra option is good. And, yeah, Jared Allen, every time I see him play, he impresses me with what he does out there on the floor. Anyway, great contest there, and, like, the Scottie Barnes tip, like, it, you know, hung up there on the back of the rim for a, you know, a millisecond that felt longer, and it was...
It would have been so awesome for that, too.
And, you know, Kim Birch helped with a little two-handed shove to Evan Mobley's back to clear Barnes for the tip attempt. And I do wonder, like, it was absolutely the right play to try and tip it, because if he had tried to, like, grab it, the clock would have...
Expired.
So I may be giving him more like basketball IQ credit than is warranted here for just tipping it. Anyway, the ball looked like it had some considerations of going in. It did not, which, you know, took us back to the Tampa Raptors a little bit. And let's hope that's not a place we dwell as we move forward.
No, we're not going back. We're not doing that.
So...
I have declared it, and so it shall be. We're not.
But before we get on to the week that shall be, Cleveland's fun, aren't they?
Yeah, they're good. Like, they're a really tough team. I feel like that is the most pleasant part of the surprise that they have been. I'm doing the thing you're doing where I'm talking myself in a big circle. They were really, really, really fun. And I thought they would be better this year, but I didn't expect them to be as tough as they were.
Yeah, I didn't think their defense would be able to be as good as it has been. Now, let me back this up with facts. It's 15th, so, they're fine. Yeah, like, they had a bunch of young talent, and young players generally struggle on defense. Like, that's the last thing to come along often. But it just looks like the connective tissue that Mobley brings, his whole skill set, mm-hmm. and Allen as a backline defender have really helped that team. And look, there are going to be some disappointed teams in the East this year.
Did you see the score, the Knicks and Cavs last night?
I didn't see any highlights, but I saw Ricky, our old friend, Ricky Rubio. What was his line? Put a smut.
He had 37, a career high.
Yeah. His
shooting was, hold on.
He was 8 for 8 from 3 at one point. I don't know if...
8 for 9. He finished 8 for 9. 37 points.
Does that mean we got a Ricky Rubio heat check, which seems very un-Ricky Rubio-like?
That was awesome. You know, you didn't mention being on the Cavs, and not because he played or anything, but I just thought you would mention it. You have a 50-50 chance of getting this right.
Kevin Bendos?
No, but that was who I
Boss
thought you would
Davis,
say. Ed Davis.
Yeah. Boss. Yeah, didn't get to see either of my faves. It sort of sucked that Pangos didn't play.
I know.
I mean, I know.
On the broadcast, they kept flashing to his parents who were sitting in the stands wearing their Cavs merch, which was really nice.
You got it. They have lots of good players, but and we just mentioned how Ricky Rubio like won a game for them in New York. So like, you can't hammer the decision, but, you know, a guy who's taken such a long journey to the NBA, his first game in his hometown, you would have hoped there'd be a few minutes for him, but I you know, from a coach's perspective, you can't make that a guiding principle.
Also, before we move on from the Cavs, your guy Allen had 18 points, 17 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals.
I think I just stan any, like, semi-traditional center now. Who
figures out a way to remain relevant and good.
It's you know, we don't need to cry for the seven-footers. There will be jobs for the seven-footers, like, even as their roles continue to diminish. But, like, the guys who don't only keep a roster spot but can continue to thrive, you love to see it.
Also, Mobley was a plus 26.
Yeah, he's good.
Wow.
He's good.
Maybe Kevin Durant will be talking about Mobley.
Yeah, maybe he just hasn't seen him yet. But on the Cleveland note, and we got to wrap up soon, but there are going to be some disappointed teams in the East this year. Like, everybody but Orlando and Detroit. And Orlando just, who did they beat yesterday, Sunday? With Cole Anthony?
Utah.
They beat...
The Cole Anthony walk-off interview was the thing of legend.
Yeah, he's coming for Anthony Edwards. I forgot who tweeted that, but he's coming for Anthony Edwards, like, best quote or like, most... I
think he's taken it already. I don't know if you saw the clip from last night, but even the way the broadcast, like, I guess they're used to it now. So they were, like, filming it like it was, like, one of those, like, boxing UFC... like post-game
there's a bit
like
of chaos. Like the Friday Night Lights.
They were zooming
the
in on
Night
his
Lights
face.
Cab,
like,
shaking around as he...
It was really amazing. I loved it. But yeah, no, the East is
like you look at the really teams, good. You know, Charlotte has come down since a good start. They can't defend a lick.
Clippers had a 22-0 run in the third.
Our man, the original man, made his debut last night, Serge Ibaka, for the Clippers.
I miss Serge.
He's a nice fellow. But between Cleveland and Washington and
Miami,
but we thought they'd
great.
Be good.
Yeah.
My point is there aren't many teams that are like in an accepted rebuilding mode or like ramping up mode. And what's funny is that the Raptors sort of are they want to be competitive, but like I think if like they ended up
they're ahead of schedule from what we.
But if they ended up, if they end, I don't want to use the past tense. Like, if they end up finishing 11th in the East this year or 12th in the East, but like Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby are both trending toward being like better versions of themselves, certainly than started the year. Like, and Pascal and Fred find a way to fit in with that. Like, A, it's hard to imagine a team like that failing to make at least the play-in game, but B, if that somehow happened, like I think most people would say, I don't know if they'd call it a success, but it'd be a reasonable outcome, and it'd be like, okay, yeah, like I feel pretty good about the direction of this team.
It wouldn't be a failure, but I don't think that that's gonna. I just can't see this team not.
Yes, if all of that happens, it's just hard to imagine them winning 33 games or whatever, 36 games, and missing the playoffs altogether.
But it is interesting to look at the East right now, and like. I think it's like Washington is fourth, Chicago. Yeah. I think it's like Washington, Chicago, Cleveland.
Yeah,
Knicks.
It's all that, which is to say, like, there are way fewer gimmies.
Like, who's going
to
fall?
Like, and, like, injuries will determine a lot of this, I think, like they did for the Raptors last year. That's, you know, the COVID run and the bout of bad luck to start the year with finishing games. That, like, that was their season. But, like, you have Indiana, which I still think Indiana's a super talented team that maybe just needs a shakeup. But Atlanta's off to a bad start, 4-6. But like, I think they might have like
the Celtics
are off to a bad start. Milwaukee's 4-6. Like, and they've missed Middleton. But like, so these things will even out. But there are going to be some unhappy teams. Is all I'm saying. Speaking of which, you alluded to them. Boston Wednesday, no Jaylen Brown. Philly Thursday. No Joel Embiid, possibly. He entered protocols on Monday. The Dwayne Casey Bowl on Saturday. We get another rookie matchup, I hope. I don't think it's a back-to-back for Detroit, but I'm not positive. Detroit comes to town. And then the Raptors are off on a six-game swing that starts in Portland on Monday. We'll probably talk to you after that game.
We'll get to see Norm.
Yeah, I will get to see Norm in person.
Yeah, you'll get to see. You'll actually get to see.
Yeah, maybe he'll give us. Do you think he'll continue to like take pride in not giving good quotes and then talking about how he's not giving good quotes?
Listen, this is where we disagree because I think Norm is a great quote.
I'll tell you what. I miss given like the number of young guys on the team this year who are like just figuring out who they are and what they want to say, and as a result are like naturally quiet so far. I miss Norm. Yeah.
You miss Norm. I feel like Norm has always given me good quotes. And maybe it's just that we've talked about like topics that he's enjoyed, you know, like on features
and
stuff.
You're a better interviewer than me, too.
That's not
no,
what
but
I'm
I let's open up that possibility.
That's
maybe
not
I need
I
to reconsider my whole life, Holly.
All right. We're not opening that in minute 50 of the pod.
It's the existential minute of the podcast. What does it all mean?
I think that Norm has always been a really good quote and really just a lovely guy to talk to in the locker room.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't.
And I miss his run pregame.
Oh,
like
him
I
running
miss
through the tunnel.
Seeing him sprint in the tunnel pregame.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to see him. And in his second...
Are you going on this trip
or
no?
Yeah, so I'll be on the first four games of that trip, which is why I said, well, we'll probably talk after the Portland game. Which is kind of weird for podcast schedule because generally it's like before a trip. So we won't have a proper preview of that trip. But it will take them to Portland, Utah, Sacramento, and San Francisco to play the Warriors. Before a little break and finishing up
for a finals preview
before Memphis and
you
Indiana.
Laugh.
I mean, I laughed when it was actually a finals preview. So why would I laugh now? we won't preview the trip in full, but just to give you an idea of what the schedule is to come. The Road Warriors hitting the road. What are you looking for in the games to come, Holly?
Just looking to see how Pascal gets back into the rhythm of things. I'm curious to see what happens with the starting lineup, as we previously discussed. Hoping that Kem, I know he was out because of knee swelling. I think they said a couple days. They hoped that then he would be back. So hopefully he will be good and ready to go in case they do want to put him in the starting lineup. But yeah, most excited just to see Pascal continue to develop his chemistry with this year's team.
I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. And within that, how I hate to harp on minutes, but I think like they have to find a way to lessen the load on Fred VanVleet. Like he's just
for sure.
He takes such a beating and he's 30. Don't get me wrong. Like it's not like he's Allen Iverson, skin and bones out there, and Allen Iverson was tough as hell and played through all sorts of shit. So,
but that's a problem with Fred too. Is even if he did need a break, or if the minutes were a lot, he would never say anything.
Yeah.
So help him. Help him. Help.
Yeah,
himself.
And a lot of that is Pascal, right? Like, which member of the Raptors rotation do you think has the best net rating right now?
Oh my God. Gary Trent.
No, Delano Benton.
I was hoping we'd find a way to
I thought it was so cool that
makes sense,
that
actually.
That
the 45
wished him a happy
TTC
birthday.
Bus? Yeah.
It had a little happy birthday Delano graphic on the front of the TTC bus.
I was going to interrupt you earlier to say that, and then I was like, I've interrupted him like 5 times this show, as I tend to do when we're talking, which I apologize for. But I'm glad you brought it up because that was awesome.
Yeah, it's him, Kem, and Chris Boucher, which makes sense because...
No, it actually totally makes sense that it was Delano. I don't know why I didn't guess
that. Well, it's because he doesn't play that much. He averages 12 minutes a game.
But every time he does, he provides a big boost. So yeah, that totally makes sense.
So start Delano. That's what I'm saying.
Wait, you said Delano?
Kem Birch and Chris Boucher.
Kem and
Chris. Well, it's...
The Chris is
but
surprising,
the three of them...
Say.
Have come on together often. That's why, what's driving it, we can differ. I would say, the most important factor there is probably Kem Birch's stability. but, you know, because the three have played so many minutes together, I wrote about that at The Athletic. I talked to all three of them individually on the last trip, which was, it's one of the perks of traveling this year is there are more opportunities to talk to the guys one-on-one than at home for obvious availability reasons. But it was nice to check in with all of them and listen to them say nice things about Delano and Kem Birch saying how it was wild that he hadn't heard of Delano, like the Canadian basketball circle.
That is the thing.
Yeah, like
wild,
the
right?
Like you think Canada basketball, like, yes, we know all the stories about how it's grown and grown and grown, but you still think like NBAers would be aware of the next NBAers coming. And maybe it's because Banton had such a, you know, he had the red shirt year and wasn't really on that path until he was, that it happened so quickly that he didn't know him. It wasn't like a, you know, a Tyler Ennis situation where, or Andrew Wiggins, like guys we've seen coming like from the second or third year, or even Jamal Murray, like coming from high school, we knew that they were going to be NBA prospects. Banton came onto the stage.
But even the other, like, think about the Canadians who have been drafted. So many that we have known of who have been drafted have not made this much of an impact in their rookie season. Like, it's crazy what he's been able to do as a 46th.
Yeah, when I wrote that story, there were only two second rounders who were playing more, who had played more total minutes.
That's what
than
I
him.
Asked last.
I don't know where. I don't know where it stands now. One is, I can't even remember his name, Robinson Earl on Oklahoma City, and you don't have.
And then Chicago.
I don't know. Anyway, I can't remember.
I feel like the other important thing when we're talking about Delano is just that, in addition to bringing energy and, like, you know, he's good. Like, he has a really good sense for the game. Like, he's just a really smart player on the fly. Like,
yeah, he's good. That is our Delano Banton analysis. And that, I think, is as good a place as any to wrap up on. We will see you probably record this Tuesday, next Tuesday, as I mentioned. So after the Portland game, unless something wacky happens between now and then, Holly, enjoy the reappearance of Norm Powell on your TV.
Yay!
Maybe I'll go to the Nike store when I'm there. I don't know. Amy Audibert said she was looking forward to going to the Nike store in Portland.
Oh, that's fun.
I don't know if I'm gonna, like, really, do I need more sneakers? Probably not.
I feel like it's probably a net negative for you to make the plans to go out, to go there. To
yeah, like, I think I just, like, something. Assuming it's, like, a nice walkable day, and, like, you can't bank on that in the Pacific Northwest, but I'd rather just, like...
Oh, even when it rains, it's lovely to walk.
Yeah. Portland. Your brief partial residence.
Love
yeah,
Portland.
So do I. It's I think I had it as my number one city, road city, last time I ranked them, moving up above New Orleans.
Wow, I am shocked.
Just because New Orleans media meal is so bad, and their fan, and like, it's not a good crowd. Like, I think New Orleans would be ahead of Portland otherwise. But those,
I love that the media meal factors that prominently in
it
your
doesn't but it's
of...
like a t- like a, it matters, it's a factor.
See, to me, like, the game night meal is like such an afterthought.
Yeah.
Like, give me a piece of cardboard pizza and we're good. Like, I don't, that is never
well,
a thought in my mind.
Well,
I'm
maybe road of. Trip to Little Caesars arena in Detroit, and we can change your mind. Holly, we're going way too long. As always, it was nice to chat with you, and thanks for joining.
Yeah, same.
Raptors fans, enjoy the week. See ya!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.